Oh, snaps.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am Dee Dee Mercer-Moff, the CEO of a raw dog food and company, where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. And I bet I would get an echo and a high five from my dear friend, Neely Piazza, who's one of the top, and I mean at the peak, the top pet nutritionist out there. What's up, Niels?
Hi, all. Not much.
Oh, gosh. I wish you would not say not much. You're always doing something. You study, research. Hey, you want to hear something? So I was listening and to a podcast today, and a doctor said that when there's new information.
Yeah. It takes 17 to 25 years for it to be get to mainstream. Is that what you were going to say?
No, but thanks for interrupting. I'm going to say 600 hours. It takes them 600 hours of a research, 600 hours of research for them to even, you know, understand this new thing. So that is why, Niels, most doctors don't. They don't want to spend 600 hours dealing with something that's out of the mainstream narrative. You know, 600 hours studying. So I thought that was pretty interesting. So that kind of helps you understand it a little bit.
And most doctors don't know how to read. Well, most doctors don't know how to read science anyway. And because they're not scientists, they're doctors. There's a difference. There's a huge difference between a scientist and a doctor. I mean, there are some that are both, but most of them are not. And besides that, peer-reviewed science is captured at this point anyway. I mean, it's all massaged into whoever's paying for it.
Yeah. I know. It is so crazy. I want to talk a little bit about recalls, okay, in the raw dog feed industry. And I want to do a comparison here. I want to ask our listeners to really open your mind and think about this for a second. All right. So when you get a recall, at least in the raw dog food industry, I can't say this for the kibble industry, but I can say this for the raw dog food industry. You will always see in the recall, it says no dogs were sick in this, you know, no dogs were sick. This is not why we're doing a recall, right? Simply, we went in, we did a test, and we found some bacteria, and it doesn't matter whether it's a low level or a high level. They never tell you what it is. They don't tell you what really the kind of strain. So basically it's a zero tolerance policy. All right. No dogs are sick. This is the point that I want to make.
Well, I think you need to elaborate on that because most people probably don't know that for raw dog food, like what you just said, they have a zero tolerance. So absolute zero bacteria, period, which is, and for human consumption, the standards are much, much lower than that. So, I mean, in other words, there is not a zero tolerance policy for human consumption. So they're holding, dog food up to a higher standard than people food. So, and plus we all know the FDA is captured too. So it's all a bunch of crap any way you look at it. You don't want to be feeding your dog sterile food. That defeats the whole point. But I don't think people realize that when they say that, it doesn't mean anything. It means absolutely nothing.
Well, exactly. All right. So I'm going to come back to that in a second. But here's what I want to point out, Neely, that if the FDA was so concerned about health and wellness, currently we have, and this is not This is something that anyone can go out and check for themselves under the VAERS reporting system. If the FDA was so concerned about health and wellness, there have been over 14,000 deaths reported. There is a Pfizer whistleblower that is going to come forward that says those numbers are more like 250,000 deaths from the human jab. Yeah, but there have been over 600,000 adverse effects. All right, let's go back.
And those VAERS numbers are the ones that are that actually made it onto the list and have been 100% confirmed. So those are the ones that they can't possibly deny. They couldn't keep the doctors from admitting and all that. So it's an incredibly low number of what the actual number is. So, but even so, I mean, 14,000 deaths in 8 months.
And we're still on a hard push, and not only on a hard push, but hey, you may not be able to get food or medical care or have a job. So here is what I want our pet parents to hear. And let me ask this question. When was the last time you saw a product that was allowed to stay on the market with let's just say, I don't know, 100 deaths since the Industrial Revolution?
And with no liability. There's zero liability.
So back to the raw dog food. And the reason that I'm bringing this up is because I saw some really nasty comments. And I see nasty comments when there are recalls. And the comments sound like this. These companies should be basically tied up, tarred, and feathered because they are endangering our dogs.
Well, that just shows you how ignorant whoever writes things like that is, because it's total BS. I mean, yeah.
So what I want people to understand is this. Make the correlation in your mind. Okay? We've got 600,000 at a very, very, very low minimum adverse effects. We have a minimum of 14. I think that number may even be 17,000 by now. But 14,000 deaths, and we're still pushing something. So tell me, does this make any sense that the FDA is really in this for health and wellness?
Well, and like what you just pointed out, so there's those 14,000 deaths and there's a huge push, and then you have zero reported sick dogs and they're forcing a recall. I mean, how does that make any sense? It doesn't. It makes zero. Recalls, in all honesty, it mean nothing. I mean, absolutely nothing. As somebody is targeted, I mean, raw dog food is on FDA's hit list. Always has been. It's always been that way. So the recalls mean absolutely nothing. If you're feeding your dog food from the grocery store that you eat yourself, that's dirtier than what you're going to get from a raw dog food company. Period. And that's provable just by the standards that are in place. So think about that.
Well, the other thing is too, I have seen recalls in the kibble companies because dogs have died. And let's take the situation.
Exactly. Remember 2007? Remember that?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean,
well, even more recently than that though, Neely, the vitamin D toxicity, because they miscalculated the synthetic vitamin D.
And that was Hills. I mean, yeah. Come on. Yeah. And even the premise of finding salmonella, that's usually what it's about is, oh, we found salmonella. Well, you know, there is salmonella everywhere. There's salmonella on your body right now. There's salmonella on your coffee table. There's salmonella on your couch. There's salmonella in your bed. It doesn't mean a thing. Means nothing. And like you said earlier, they don't give a strain. They don't give a They don't give a count. They don't give anything. They find one cell of salmonella. Oh my God, we have to recall it. And that is literally what they're doing. So, you know, and beyond that, this whole germ theory thing, people have got to get past that. Germs are not evil. And bacteria and all that, we would not live. We would not be able to live without them. So trying to take them out of your life completely is a death sentence. Totally. You don't want to be feeding your dog dead, sterilized food. You don't want to do that. That's not the way the body works.
You know, I've said this so many times, Neely, and it's never been more apparent than it is today, that our unfounded fears due to misinformation causes us more harm.
Absolutely.
And as I try to say to my pet parents, the raw dog food industry has had to change based on unfounded fears. Okay. Packaging has had to change. The ozonated type, you know, sprays and waters that you have to put on it to keep the bacteria down so that the FDA doesn't come in and shut you down. Grinding of the bone down to nothing so that the food is less chunky. I mean, just all of the things that we have done just because of unfounded fears.
Yeah, beyond that, it's not even just unfounded fears. It's straight up lies. Straight up.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people can't go there. Well, I mean, maybe they can in today's world, because I think that there's a lot of things that if you have a thinking mind.
Yeah, that's part of the problem, too, is we've been taught not to think. Just rely on the quote unquote experts.
I mean, again, I can't express to pet parents enough about research and. Today, research is so controlled. I mean, if you look at everything that's being shut down, and I say this over and over again, when something if there's so much fear around a certain ideology or a certain bit of information or just true scientific information, then you got to start saying, what the heck is going on? Why would they not want me to have that information? The argument, Neely, has been, well, because it endangers people. All that information, it's going to endanger somebody.
Translated as, we're too stupid to tell truth from fiction, basically.
I mean, I'm just so blown away that we just rely on doctors. Now, let me give you an example. So I recently was at dinner, and the waiter at this particular place thought that he would take it upon himself to tell us that if he could do anything to encourage health and wellness for us was to get the jab. Now, what he didn't realize that you had four people sitting at dinner who were extremely well-educated. So I said to the waiter, I said, well, so tell me, you know, what do you think about the spike protein, antibody dependent enhancement, ADE? And yeah. He said, what are you talking about? And I said, if you don't know those three simple things about the jab that you are encouraging us to take, how can you encourage people to do something if you know not what you speak of? And the response was this, and this is truly what we see with our pet parents, and we see it with human beings. I just trust my doctor. And the next question was, did your doctor tell you about just these three things? No. So maybe, I don't know, maybe his doctor didn't know because he didn't do 600 hours of research.
Well, it didn't even take that much to find out about that.
Theory, right?
Burying their head in the sand there.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you need to go in for a surgery or you need to go in and do a spay neuter or something like that, you've got to have those experts, right? You've got to do that. I had a pet parent who feeds raw, and I mean, the bullying that goes on is so, it's not as bad as how they're, you know, bullying people about the jab, but it's pretty darn bad. And people, I said in the last podcast, if you do not do your research, if you don't know the basic, and the basic is, why do you feed raw? You feed raw to nourish the cells so the cells can do what? Promote health and wellness and boost immunity and survive, right? I mean, plain and simple. If you put toxins in the body, it goes the other way. This particular pet parent said to me that because she pushed back on the vet and said, I'm going to feed raw, please don't talk to me about nutrition. She was trying to push her to go see their state vet nutritionist. Now, you and I know that that is just a $400 fee for them to go ahead and push the prescription diets.
Don't ever go to a veterinary nutritionist. They'll use that program that tells you to feed cooked chicken and rice and carrots, or they'll put you on a prescription, like you said.
So many people still come up with this, I'm going to give my dog rice, whether they have, you know, whether they're having loose stools or, I mean, why, what else would you give? I wouldn't give my dogs rice. I know you wouldn't either. But what would you suggest that pet parents give? Let's say if a dog has, you know, the runs, which is one of the major reasons why people do this boiled chicken and rice routine.
Well, first of all, so what if the dog has the runs? So what? You'd rather it come out than stay in, right? So there's all kinds of reasons why that could be happening. So if they're throwing up or if they have the runs like that, it's because the body is trying to get rid of something toxic. And that could have come from anything. That can come from the environment. That could come from a vaccine. That could come from a flea and tick treatment. That could come from a pesticide. That could come from eating grass in a manicured park. That could come from eating a bug. That could come from some sort of topical thing. That could come from air fresheners. That could come from carpet cleaners. That could come from fire retardants on their bed or your sheets. That could come from any of those things. It has absolutely nothing to do with what they're eating. So, you know, if the body's trying to get rid of it, let it happen. Don't try to stop it. That's the problem with allopathic medicine. It tries to put stoppers in both ends of the body. And you need to let the body flush out whatever it's trying to get rid of. Now, if you have projectile liquid diarrhea for a couple of days, then you probably have a problem. If you have a dog that has runny poop for whatever reason and it lasts a day or two, so what? It's fine. Don't worry about it. Get over it. It's not a big deal. You know, if it's a different color, if it's a different texture, well, it better be a different color and a different texture every day, because you better be rotating your proteins and feeding different things every day. So, you know, it should look different. So, now if you really have a problem with diarrhea, the best thing to do is to stop feeding them altogether. Because that means there's something going on somewhere in the system, and it's having a problem. So you need to stop all input, let it recalibrate itself, clean out whatever's in there, repair any kind of damage that has happened, coat any kind of abrasions or anything like that, and let it kind of, like I said, reset and then start over. So that's the best thing to do for that. I think people freak out about stuff like that for no reason whatsoever. And for whatever reason, they immediately say, oh my God, it's the food. So how many times have we had people say, oh, well, the food did this or did that. And then we've taken the exact same food from them, even from chubs that they have already opened, mm-hmm. and gave it to our dogs, and they're fine.
Now, some of the ideas that people have is this. Okay, my dog wouldn't touch this food. My dog would not touch this food, so I know there's something wrong with it. That's not okay. Something wrong with it. Maybe it's just that your dog doesn't care for that combination, right?
Right.
So if it's a,
they have taste preferences too.
Right. Now, people will say, but I feed fish and I feed tripe and I feed beef and my dog likes all of those. I said, well, maybe they don't like it all together. Sort of like a kid who didn't like peas and his stuff, I guess. But I do think that this is an idea that that pet parents have. And what I want to say is this, is that the plant is going to catch it. The FDA is going to catch it. And we certainly are going to catch it before it gets to your dogs. But as you've said, Neely, it's hard to say there's something wrong with the food if you have one dog that doesn't like this blend and our test subjects, 7-8 dogs, all are eating it fine.
So there's all kinds of things. I mean, you have to, and people freak out when their dogs don't eat. And yeah, admittedly, sometimes that can be a problem. But most of the time, I mean, if they're so... so far gone and so compromised that not eating is actually a symptom of something worse, then you're going to know that. I mean, that's not just going to creep up all of a sudden. So, there's any number of things. I mean, a lot of people are feeding too much volume. Some people are feeding too often. Realistically, you should only feed once a day, unless there's a super good reason not to. It's a whole lot better for the dog to feed him once a day. Maybe they're not hungry. Maybe they're tired of that particular blend. Maybe they don't like, I mean, remember Phoebe, she wouldn't eat rabbit for nothing. I mean, all the rest of them love it. She would not eat rabbit to save my life. And she just didn't like it. So you honor those things. I mean, if they're trying to tell you something, then you listen. You know, just because they turn their nose up, there's any number of reasons for them to be doing that. You know, maybe they're not hungry. Every once in a while, a dog will fast himself for one reason or another. I mean, it's those kinds of things are not things to freak out about and to automatically say, oh my God, it's the food. I guarantee you, it's not the food. There's something else going on or something else that the dog's been exposed to. It may be something you know about. It may be something you don't know about. There may be tension in the house. There may be, I mean, any number of things going on.
Yeah. And when you say it's not the food, now what we're saying here is that it's not oh my God, there's a ton of, you know, this bacteria or that bacteria. Yeah.
Exactly.
Because I've said this a million times. I get a dog down the street. This dog will only eat beef. And I have personally taken other blends over there to try this dog on it. I do know that I've tried to introduce him. He's not in my house where there's absolutely no fear. I have a benchmark here, right? I got two Germans who don't turn their nose up at anything. But I also nearly don't. I mean, look, I see the poop. Obviously I walk my dogs. If they got runny poops, I pretty much go, oh, what did I give? Did I give a boneless blend by mistake? Right. Did I give too much fat?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I kind of look at that and I know within a day that's going to change. Again, back to what I said at the top of the podcast is that these unfounded fears will cause you to go into a rabbit hole. I have several customers that really, really, truly, truly believe that their dog can only eat, that their dog can only eat one type of protein. Not that the dog will only eat one type of protein, but that the dog can only eat because supposedly it's going to cause him to be itchy or whatever. And listen, the weather's already turning drier, right? So I woke up with a, you know, bloody nose today because it's getting dry up here in the mountains. So we're going to start getting these calls about dogs being itchy.
To that point, staying on a single protein for an extended period of time will cause them to develop some sort of a issue with that protein. You need to rotate.
You know, I've got one pet parent that is just scared to death to feed anything other than duck. And the thing about duck that, you know, it's very low on the B 12 vitamins and some other things, you know, kind of when you look into it. But, and the reason that they're afraid is because they lost one dog, you know, and I said, well, what was that dog feeding? Well, just beef. And I understand when there is a situation that causes you pain, that you may, what I'm saying is she doesn't want to lose this particular dog, right? And she's afraid because there was some sort of report, you know, test or whatever that said this dog could only eat duck that was totally allergic to everything else. And so unfortunately, that's all this dog gets. And it's in it, and it's worrisome. It's worrisome to me. But you know,
she's creating a problem. And those allergy tests, I mean, those are one particular instant in time. That stuff changes, and it's not, people will tell you they're like maximum 10% accurate. There's no accuracy there. It's not something to go by. And as far as an allergy goes, it's incredibly rare. And those sensitivities and intolerances change with time. So just because you have one report that is at best 10% accurate, and you're basing your dog's entire diet on that, that's one data point to take into account when you're creating a diet. That's not something to live and die by. That's one of the problems with those tests, is all these kind of tests like that, people, they misuse them and look at them in the wrong way. You need to look at how your dog is doing and progressing, and how they look, how they act, what their energy level is, what their attitude is, those kinds of things, rather than what a piece of paper tells you.
Well, not only that, but then your dog gets totally imbalanced.
Right.
As we always say, if you're going to give the dog everything they need, you're going to have to, you know, rotate your proteins. So they don't rotate the proteins. They do one protein. Now the dog is out of balance. And now what are they blame? Oh, the raw diet didn't work for my dog. No, the raw diet works, but you need to work it the way that it's supposed to.
You need to follow a few principles. Exactly.
So I want to ask you a question about lethargy. Okay. Sometimes I hear this, and I see this in a totally different way. I will hear a pet parent say, this particular blend doesn't work for my dog. It makes him very lethargic.
Okay.
My question is, what would cause a dog in a pure raw diet, meat, bones, organ, fat, maybe you got a few veggies in there with a barf blend. What would cause a dog to be lethargic?
I don't know. Going on a 5-mile hike the day before? I don't know. I mean,
okay. My take on this, Niels, is this, is that it could have a higher level of fat, which causes the dog to be more satiated and calm. And somebody may be looking at that as lethargic. What say you?
Well, along those same lines, I wouldn't say fat is more satiating, particularly because I'm so anti-fat, but that is a valid point. But you know, it could be that some proteins take longer to digest. Some things like turkey has tryptophan in it. I mean, how many? And you know, everybody falls asleep after Thanksgiving dinner, right? Why? So, you know, there are a lot of different reactions like that. I mean, you know, different foods will give you different, they have different amino acids in them. They have different fatty acids in them. They will give you a different amount of energy, calming, those kinds of things, like what you said. So, yeah, I think that's probably a valid interpretation. But I mean, and it depends on what they mean by lethargic. I mean, if the dog can't move, which I doubt that's
comatose.
Yeah. But you know, that would be more like you fed him too much or something. I mean, I don't know. People hear these buzzwords and, you know, put their own meaning to them and then freak out. And it's like, you know, dogs are
dynamic living beings. They have mood swings, they have energy swings, they have good days and bad days. You know, a dog is not going to be 100% of the time. I mean, you're not. Why would your dog? I didn't mean you particularly. I meant the person.
I'm 110 all the time.
Yeah, that's probably true. But I mean, you know, they have to let them be. You know, I mean, they're going to get sick. They're going to have bad days. They're going to have moody days. They're going to be grumpy. That stuff happens. They're living dynamic beings, and you know, like kids, but you know, just go with the flow.
Go with the flow. All right. I have a question that came in. The question was, what supplement should a pet parent use after a dog has been spayed or neutered?
Well, I don't think anything specifically just for that, but it depends on what they're worried about.
True. So let's talk about what happens during a spay or neuter. Obviously, Neely, they've got to go under anesthetics.
Right. Okay?
That's one. Number two, most likely the dog's being sent home with antibiotics.
So I can speak to this pretty good because Hazel just got spayed not too long ago. And she's 8 and she had a mammary tumor removed, which is the only reason that I spayed her in the first place. So I did a few extra things for her, but you know, it's always harder on an older dog. Just like it would be harder on an older person. So to your point, I did use the liver tonic to help detox, the anesthesia and all that. And I got sent home with the regular antibiotic and Remedil and all that stuff. And I just put it on a shelf and kept it away from all of my homeopathic stuff. So it didn't like drip negative energy on it. but you know, so I paid for it and took it home and promptly put it away somewhere. So I sent her in, loaded up with Arnica. And when I got her back, I gave her Arnica and some other homeopathic things to help with pain and healing. I gave her CBD oil for pain. I gave her green eggs and the Safe C, specifically.
Green-lipped muscle oil.
Yeah, and the green eggs supplement. Specifically, pain issue and the high omega-3s to help with inflammation. And I used, I only had to do this once. She came back with staples, and she had a big incision. Her incision was quite a bit bigger than a normal spay would have been because of the tumor. The second or third day, I put some Restore on there, and she's been completely fine.
Love it.
They even commented when I went and had her staples pulled on how great her incision looked. No antibiotics, no Remedil, no comb, none of that mess. And she was, that is, a spay is a major surgery, and she was kind of owie for a couple of days and was, you know, we took it pretty slow. But like I said, she had a much larger incision. Hers was much more invasive, and she is a lot older than a typical dog would have been. So, and yet she still bounced back like the average 1 to 2 year old dog would have. So that's what I did. But it all depends on, I mean, there's not something that you should give them just because. I mean, if there's certain concerns like what I had, that's what I did. And I think that the liver tonic and the detox like that is a good idea. And if it was me, obviously, I would absolutely not do antibiotics, because all you're doing is destroying your gut flora that you've worked so hard to promote and to diversify and to keep healthy.
That you definitely need during that time.
I wasn't going to say anything. I just took my dog, paid my bill, and went home.
Which is unlike you, but you were like, I just want my dog out of here. Let me get him out of here. Get my dog back. Okay, so here's a question that a lot of people are going to ask when they hear this. The question is, you do a spay or a neuter. You don't have a bacterial infection. So the antibiotics, in reality, are, again, a just in case.
Just in case, yeah. I mean, if the vet did their job properly and kept a clean surgery suite and did a clean surgery, you don't need that.
So I did the same thing with Lozzie, who ripped open her leg right down to the bone, right?
Yeah.
Took her in. She got, you know, 8 stitches. They sent, well, they didn't send me home because I actually just said, I don't need these. I don't need this. I don't need that. Take that off. Take that off. They were all the, you know, the antibiotics. And I think I called you and we went over that. And, you know, and they look at you like you got 2 heads, but I don't really care. I'm used to it.
Yeah, right.
And so we did the same thing, exactly the same thing that you did. The Restore, we put that on there. Restore
stuff is like magic. My God, that's if anybody listening doesn't have a bottle of that, get one. It is like the best thing on the planet.
You're gonna cause me to be out of stock. That's all right. I'll order more. I've been trying to get Rita on my podcast, who is the founder of this Restore.
Yeah. She makes it. She actually makes it. It is like amazing.
Why do you think it's so amazing? I mean, what's in it, do you think that
I don't know. I don't remember what herbs are in it, but Rita's fabulous. She's been doing herbalism forever and she's a fabulous resource and it's just it's an amazing salve for, I mean, you know, I a couple of years ago when I sent you pictures when I cut the end of my finger off and
thanks for that.
I stuck some Restore on there and a Band-Aid and it was fine. I mean, it was glued back together in like 3 days. So, you know, it works great among other things. Anytime anybody gets a scrape or an itch or anything like that, it one application pretty much is all I've ever had to use.
You know, some of our Raw Squad that get tattoos, right? And so they'll put that, we have a bottle in the office, they'll put that Restore, you know.
Oh yeah, I bet that's great.
Yeah,
I bet that's great for that.
So they put that on there, or you know, just all types of things. Like a dog has a you know, Lozzie, when she goes after a stick or when she goes after a ball, man, she goes head first and slides, right? So sometimes she comes up with a scrape on her nose, right? And honestly, this dog must like the way that the Restore tastes because she's constantly licking on it. And it's safe. It's safe if they lick it. So that's good too. So we got the Restore. Yeah. The other thing that I really like that we have, Neely, is that your go-to that sprays, because it's got arnica in it. It's got everything. So like if we got trauma, right away, we got trauma, cut your leg, we got a bee sting, we got something, you know, Julianne, who is also going to be doing an educational webinar for our group and for our listeners. Great. Yeah.
Oh, I forgot. I gave Hazel jump for joints too, because it has arnica and a couple of other pertinent things. And since my car accident, I've been taking the jump for joints for all my issues too. Works great.
Are you jumping for joints more now?
No, but I can breathe better.
So one thing, and I never brought this up, Neely, on the podcast, because I really didn't know how you wanted to talk about that. Do you want to talk about what happened?
Early in May, I was sitting at a stoplight. I was first in line at a stoplight and I was on my way home from work. So I had all the dogs with me and a guy was coming off of a overpass to the light I was sitting at and he fell asleep and he rear-ended me and shot me across traffic, totaled my car. I ran into, I think I sideswiped 2 or 3 cars on the way across. I don't rightly remember. And the only way I was able to stop was to go head first into a light post on the catty corner intersection. The car was crunched from the back to the front. Phoebe and Angel, my lab, and my older corgi were killed in that crash. And I had some pretty decent injuries, all soft tissue, but all cartilage, tendon, ligament stuff that takes freaking forever to heal. I mean, I would have been better off with a broken bone other than they would have. Oh, and by the way, I had done all of that recovery with chiropractic, massage, acupuncture, and homeopathy. So, yeah, and all the dogs got arnica immediately afterwards, and they all kind of calmed down a little bit. But yeah, it was pretty horrific.
And you lost Phoebe, who is your lab, and you lost one of the corgis in that accident.
Yeah,
and you know, I was talking about this with Dr. Judy, Dr. Jasek. And you know, a lot of people worry about dogs riding in the very back of their car. Some people have cages, but here's the thing. In an accident like that, where you're sitting still,
it wouldn't have mattered.
It wouldn't have mattered. I mean,
if they had been in crates, the crates, they would have been crushed and mangled. As it was, they were, you know, thrown around a little bit, and three of them were fine. But if they had been in security crates in the back of the car, the crates would have been crumbled and they would have all been dead. So, you know, it's kind of like the seatbelt. Sometimes it's a good thing. Sometimes it's not. I wasn't wearing a seatbelt. If I'd been wearing a seatbelt, I would have been dead. So, you know, you have to make your own decision. You can't say one way is always better than the other. You have to do what is, you know, what you feel comfortable with. But my entire rib cage would have been broken and crushed. I probably would have ruptured a lung. I would, you know, there's any number of things that if I had a seatbelt on in that particular accident, I would not have lived. And if the dogs had been in crates, I suspect at least more than two, and most likely all of them would have been dead. So,
yeah,
it was pretty horrendous. I mean, you know.
Yes, it was. You couldn't even lift up your dog food to put it in the freezer.
So. I know. And one of my dearest friends brought it over to me, so I didn't have to.
Yeah, but you know, we're so sorry about the loss of your two dogs, and but I do think one thing that is so true about you, Neely, is that you do wholeheartedly practice what you preach, because in many situations when there is high trauma like that, or there is a situation where you're in a wreck and the dogs, you know, are definitely injured. Obviously these two died, but you know that the other ones have been banged around. A lot of times our beliefs or ideologies or our practices can go right out the window. If, you know, when we have fears, when you know, things are amped up, when times are tough. But I think what you've really shown me is that, look, this isn't something that you just consult on and pull it, you know, out of thin air. These are things that you live and breathe. You've gone through it on the human side. You've gone through it on the pet side. And you see what works and what doesn't. And I think that that's something that not everybody has the fortune to test out, right? They don't test that out.
Well, and the dogs all had, they did their recovery with homeopathy, and they all went and saw Dr. Harper. And
Dr. Andy Harper, who's a great dog, pet and chiropractor.
So we did chiropractic with them, and we've done some energy frequency stuff with them. And the three that survived are, you know, Mabel needs another adjustment, but she had neck issues already. So it's kind of a maintenance thing with her, but everybody else is pretty much normal. None of us had any PTSD. They all willingly get back in the car, are happy to go anywhere. They weren't traumatized like that.
And you have a new puppy now.
Yeah, she's a mess.
And she's a Jack Russell, which is blows me away. A Jack Russell, well, but
I had a Jack Russell before too. She was great, but this one, she's in my lap right now. Yeah, she's a mess.
but you know all these breeds, because you manage a facility that has over 100 dogs at a time. So you see a lot of breeds. So it's not as if you don't know what kind of dog. Yeah. What you're getting into.
It makes a big difference. Even with Daphne, the one I had before, keep them away from all that toxic crap they don't need, and feed them properly so that they don't have all this weird stuff clouding their mind, you know. By the way, before I forget, anybody that hears this, just about that whole accident, please don't do the condolences thing. It just brings it all back. So I appreciate the thoughts and prayers and for everybody knowing, but please don't send me any reminders.
Now I want to ask you, you've been trying out the new product that we have called Better Bones for your puppy. It's a very small dog. You wanted to add a little more bone so that the puppy gets the calcium, phosphorus that she needs. This is real bone ground up. It's very clean and it's very convenient. The question that I wanted to ask you, Niels, was what is the consistency of the poop with the ground up bone?
So what I've been doing, and this just turns out to be really convenient because she's tiny. She's like 3 pounds. She's teeny tiny. But I've been giving her just a regular whatever blend everybody else is getting in the morning. So she's getting her regular amount of ground bone in the blend. And then she's getting a second dose mixed with the tripe with the other stuff in the evening. So, and her consistency has been great. She's got on a regular schedule, and even though it is like 3:30 in the morning, she has to go poop, but you know, whatever. So it's been great, and it's working out really good. And of course, when she's big enough, I'll start giving her real bones, you know, but she's just too tiny for anything probably than chicken neck.
From a health standpoint, you decided not to do, you didn't want to do any of the vaccines because we want to obviously get our dogs as healthy as possible. So are you not worried about the puppy diseases, or would you not have been the puppy diseases? Okay. And the question is why?
Well, there's no need to be. I mean, more worried about them since she's been vaccinated than anything else. And for any to vaccinate, even if you are going to vaccinate, which, you know, I would never do it by choice, but if you're going to, you should never do it before they're 16 weeks, because the maternal antibodies negate any kind of reaction from the immune system that you're going to get. And so you get absolutely no benefit in all risk, all damage and no risk. So if you're going to do it, don't do anything before 16 weeks ever. So this puppy was 8 weeks old when I picked her up. So she got vaccinated at 7 weeks, and, you know, she weighed probably a pound and a half, 2 pounds, and got a full dose, just like a Great Dane would get, for nothing, for absolutely no reason. I mean, it's totally asinine the way they do that. So
their immune system is immature. It's not going to have any positive effect whatsoever. Not that I think that vaccines have any positive effect anyway, but even if you believe in vaccine theory, it doesn't make any sense to do that before the immune system is mature enough and vulnerable enough to, you know, the maternal antibodies are gone to be able to mount a reaction to a vaccine. That's just silly. It goes against everything, which is why they do it. So they say the maternal antibodies wane anywhere between 6 and 16 weeks. So that's why they do it, starting at 6 or 7 weeks every 2 weeks, just so they will be sure and hit that spot. Well, I mean, how ridiculous is that? Beyond logic, why you would do that. So if you're going to vaccinate a puppy, don't do it until they're at least 16 weeks old. And distemper and rabies have both been shown, if they do respond to it and they do produce antibodies, which is not the be-all end-all to the immune system, by the way, but if they do produce antibodies, they're good for life. So rabies is a legal issue, distemper is not. But and parvo is one, it was a vaccine created disease in the 80s. It just appeared in the 80s from a cat vaccine. So it's not even a natural disease. It was vaccine created. Only younger dogs are vulnerable to it. And if they're vaccinated and they get it, there's a much higher death rate than if they are not vaccinated and they get it. So no, I'm not, I'm way more afraid of a vaccine than I am of any natural disease. Or illness or infection or whatever you want to call it.
So Dr. William Faulkner is doing his rabies course currently.
Yeah. And it's free. If you have everybody sign up for it and take it, I've done it. It's pretty informative. People assume that if your dog is not vaccinated against rabies and they bite you, they're rabid, period. That's the assumption.
Right.
It's just like people are assuming if they get, you know what, they're going to die, even though it's like outrageously low death rate. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just assume that if your dog's not vaccinated for rabies and they're exposed to it or they bite you, they have rabies. It's just automatic and it's ridiculous. That rabies is not, I mean, Canada has been declared rabies free. And there is no rabies in the domestic dog population in North America. In the wildlife population, yes, there is. But just because your dog is exposed to something, or even if they get bitten by something that's rabid, that doesn't necessarily mean they're even going to get it. I mean, that's the only way they're going to, but it doesn't mean they 100% will. So if a rabid skunk walks past your yard one day, according to the powers that be, that means your dog's been exposed to rabies. How much sense does that make?
Is rabies transmitted through the air?
No,
I didn't think so.
The whole ideology around vaccines is so messed up and it's so fraudulent, and you know,
it's definitely a belief because it's not based on real science.
Well, it's not based on logic either. Even if you take the fake science and, you know, if vaccines protect you, then what difference does it make if somebody else is not vaccinated or another dog is not vaccinated? How does that affect you if they work? How does that, I mean, even with the fake science, that doesn't make sense.
Dr. Will Falconer, DVM. So they do have a free rabies masterclass going on. He's going to talk about some homeopathic stuff as well. So anyway, he's got some good information out there.
He has good heartworm information too. He has a good heartworm.
Well, people are always asking me about heartworm information. So if you want to go over there and check out his information, he will send you emails. He was in India. Did he move back? I don't know.
No, he's still there.
I say it every podcast right now. I do think it's wise, very wise, to buy extra food right now. And remember, your dollar goes further today than it will tomorrow. Well,
tomorrow.
If you have a way to store food, I would store it. I would get extra stuff. And I would get extra supplements, Neely, because let's just say that, God forbid, you know, there's not a way to keep raw dog food and you have to go back on a kibble. Yikes.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
Yeah, I know.
because I ain't doing that.
But I would be getting some extra supplements as well for yourself and your dog. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining the Raw Dog Food Truth. Go to Raw Dog Food and Company today, where your pet's health is our business, and friends, don't let friends feed kibble. See you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.